Hey guys, welcome back to the GOAT Network. I am your host, Michael Clark, and I am joined, as always, during our off-season content production for the draft in the NFL. Monica Teske is with me. Monica, welcome in.
Hey, glad to be here. Excited to bring some college football color to a NFL discussion.
And that you will. Now, here's the thing that I want to point out as I'm pulling up my very first mock draft. Because I'm going to go ahead and I'll leave it side by side, and we can talk about the differences between the two of them. So, if it will. It's being a little finicky, but you can see the names. It's fine. So let me do this. I'm going to stop my screen here. I'm going to present. You guys listening, you won't hear it, but who cares? Entire screen, too. There we go. Okay, Monica Teske. Here's my first mock draft on the left, my most current on the right. Before we tell the people who the picks are, how many changes do you see?
A few.
That's right. There's at least two, and they're not massive changes necessarily, but they are depending on who you are, I guess, and who you root for. Let's start with this. Number one overall, the Chicago Bears, they take Bo Callahan. Starting quarterback from wherever it was that guy in draft day played football. Was it Wisconsin?
I think it was Wisconsin.
Yeah. Or Stanford. It was one of the two. Here's my concern. Caleb Williams is obviously the pick here at number one. And he's the pick mainly because you have no choice. You've got to take him. Or you have to trade this pick for a massive amount of draft picks and players, but Caleb Williams is number one. No matter who's picking here, he's the number one pick. I don't know that he should be. And there's a couple of things that are kind of popping up that are kind of concerning me as a guy who has the number one and two picks in his draft. I would be tempted to take Caleb Williams in almost any other year, but when you go to the combine and it's like, I'm declining to do medicals for teams. Only one team can draft me. Okay. And your idea of making it possible for one of those 32 teams to draft you is to be inaccessible. I just don't know that makes sense for Caleb Williams to decline to do medicals. I understand the necessary evil for some of these guys. They decline to do the throwing because they have a pro day with their players that they're used to throwing to. They know all of the rhythm and everything. I get that. I don't like it, but I get it. Because the thing that cracks me up is you're going to have to go to a team with players you've very likely never thrown to.
Exactly.
And so I kind of want to see how you do with people you've never thrown to before, because that's the mark of a good quarterback, is who's able to go out there and sling it and make it work no matter what. I have problems with Caleb Williams because of his off-the-field stuff. There's even a joke about someone saying that Caleb Williams has announced, you know, that he will only play under an MLB style contract, meaning he wants to play quarterback for the Los Angeles Dodgers at $700 million over the life of his deal. And I kind of, at a certain point, hearing all this stuff, you believe it. You think it's true because he has said some things that are really boggling. He has a father who is apparently saying some things that, if they're true and not just reporters and people trying to get a scoop, Caleb Williams might be one of the worst number one picks in recent memory based on off-the-field stuff. And the only thing that makes me want to call him Bo Callahan is, in the movie Draft Day, the biggest thing, one of the biggest scenes of that entire movie is, you know, how many people went to Bo Callahan's birthday party? His 21st birthday party. Not a single player went. And then there's this other thing where a team put a $100 bill at the back of the playbook to see who would read it. And after doing all of this, Bo Callahan lied that he had read the playbook when he really hadn't. And then Brian Drew, the quarterback for the Browns, was the one that had basically taped a note to the $100 bill saying, give me this when I win you the Super Bowl. It just movie stuff, basically. The comment that Caleb Williams made, I declined to do medicals because only one team can draft me, alienates every team that could potentially need a quarterback. So I'm just going to go through them real quick just so we have our cards on the table here. If we really want to talk about it, the Seattle Seahawks could technically offer a king's ransom to trade up. The New Orleans Saints could try to offer a king's ransom to move up. The Oakland Raiders could offer a king's ransom to move up. The Denver Broncos, the Minnesota Vikings, the New York Jets, the Atlanta Falcons, the New York Giants, and that's just in the top 16. That's eight teams that he declined to do medicals for that could easily trade up if they really wanted him. But then you go deeper and you look at teams like those that are picking later in the rounds. If the Buccaneers are really not sold on Baker Mayfield coming back, what if they were really willing to make a play? What if the LA Rams were willing to make a play? Those are two other teams, which obviously the rest of them, other than the Steelers, may be trying to trade up, which I wouldn't expect, but it's possible. You don't alienate teams just because only one team can draft you, because Mike Tomlin has a saying that I really do think is important. Mike Tomlin approaches every NFL draft 4 years down the road in his brain, because all of these players that are selected this month or next month, in 4 years, many of them will not re-sign with their teams. They'll not be on a second contract. And if you don't do your due diligence on them now, you may not have some information that you need later. So if 4 years from now, Caleb Williams is the next Zach Wilson, Sam Darnold, and he is on another team, maybe he will regret this decision. But that being said, unfortunately for us as mock draft analysts, the number one pick is already kind of set in stone. It's Caleb Williams. Monica, what are your thoughts on Caleb Williams?
So, as I've told you kind of off air, I've been doing some deep diving on these quarterbacks. And one of the things that I noticed today was Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, and J.J. McCarthy all have better adjusted passing percentages than Caleb Williams. Basically, adjusted passing percentage is where you don't count the drops against the quarterback. So, you know, if the ball goes where it's supposed to go, but the receiver doesn't make the catch, it's not going to go against the quarterback like it would on just like a normal completion percentage.
Right.
So, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, and all of them, all four of them had receivers dropping passes at double the rate that Caleb Williams receivers drop passes.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still more accurate than him.
Yeah.
By a substantial amount. And it's almost without exception that a passer becomes less accurate in the NFL.
That's true, because it's a lot harder for them to complete passes.
Right. Because the coverage is so much tighter in the NFL. So how confident are you in, I mean, everyone's talking about how, you know, it's, what do they call it? Like off platform plays.
Yeah.
That Caleb Williams, how confident are you that he's going to be able to make up for his passing accuracy issues? The fact that he does not have a lot of speed. How is he going to make up for all of that by just being able to throw off platform?
Yeah, and this is the problem. You never really hear me say this, but he should have stayed for his senior year, because he won the Heisman, not this past year, but the year before that. And then, in all honesty, he did not look very good. And there is a part of me that kind of sits here and says, if I'm Caleb Williams, I'm transferring to the SEC or to Ohio State. I'm going back to a team that I know will be in the playoff consideration, because no matter what, USC is not in that consideration today. They're not probably going to be in that consideration at the start of this football season, as far as I know. And so he goes back to USC last year because he had no choice. He had to play. He wasn't eligible for the draft. And he really didn't put up, in my opinion, that great of a film through the stretches where they were struggling to win and struggling to do all of this kind of stuff. And I just don't know what I don't know.
But also, Lincoln Riley is supposed to be the quarterback whisperer.
That's true. And
Caleb Williams has gone down in his quarterback success as the longer he's been with Lincoln Riley. So is that saying that Caleb Williams is not listening to coaching? Does that speak to his character? What does that speak to? And honestly, I was reading some scouting reports on these guys earlier, and unanimously across the board, every scouting report that I read on Caleb Williams said that his decision-making ability is very suspect.
We'll have to see how his pro day shapes up, but right now, there might be a reason why the Bears are more in line with trading Justin Fields, and it's probably because they're not getting any calls for the number one pick. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part, but I'm willing to make it. Pick number two, Washington Commanders select a quarterback. They take the Heisman winner, Jaden Daniels. To me, this seems like a slam dunk for Washington. You bring in a guy that has won the Heisman. Drake May, we've seen too many Duke and University of North Carolina guys that have not panned out, and I don't think that they're the type of players where you're going to want to see them taking it 2 overall. Jaden Daniels with Scary Terry and all of the players that are in Washington, they just signed Zach Ertz today when we're recording this on Wednesday. It seems too much of a slam dunk for it to be Jaden Daniels, in my opinion.
I agree.
Number three, I'm going to take back everything I just said. Drake May, quarterback to the New England Patriots. Monica, this just kind of screams a Patriots pick to me. I know Belichick is gone, but he's really not, because Jerod Mayo is a Belichick disciple, and they're going to try to do as much of the Patriot way as possible. And so I do think that Drake May will be the guy that is going to be involved in the discussions for the number three overall pick. Any thoughts on that?
I agree. I'm torn on my feelings on Drake May, and I do think Jaden Daniels, I guess, if you were going to put a negative on him, he might be undersized.
Yeah.
And I think Drake May, because he is the ideal quarterback size, is where he is in the draft. And I don't like picking somebody for their physicality necessarily. But I don't know. A quarterback is arguably the most important position in sports.
Yeah.
So are the Patriots going to risk it all? I don't know. And they really don't have anyone else on their roster that could help. So maybe risk it all. I don't know. I feel very torn about this.
Yeah. And we don't really know yet, but this is the best way I can try to get into the minds of these teams. So it is going to be interesting to see the pro days and the other things, and Daniel Jeremiah's mock drafts as they get closer to time, because the dude's a wizard. I think they tell him at least 3 or 4 of the picks that are going down in every top 5. So
surely
I'll be very curious to see how that all shakes up. At 4 and 5, I'm not going to speak much about these because there's no change. Malik Nabers to the Cardinals, Brock Bowers to the Chargers. I'm seeing people try to mock Bowers later in the draft, and they're trying to make like Rome Odunze or one of these wide receivers that's available going to the Chargers. I just don't think in a division where you have had Darren Waller in the past, Michael Meyer was playing pretty well last year, Travis Kelce, and you also have just Noah Fant, who was traded away, but you still have some of these things. Like, the tight end's always been an important position in the AFC West. I don't know why you wouldn't want to give the team that is in salary cap purgatory themselves the ability to cheat. Because if you pay this guy as a tight end, you save money. You pay a wide receiver, you don't save money. So that's all I'll say on that myself, but go ahead.
And he spent a good portion of snaps in the slot.
Exactly.
So
Justin Herbert to him just seems like the ideal dream if you were to do it. Pick number 6, we have a trade. The New York Giants have made a trade with the Houston Texans. I know Nico Collins is a wonderful wide receiver, but John Mechie, I don't think has been the same since he had to get over cancer. And he doesn't look as explosive, hasn't really been a contributor a whole lot in that offense. They did sign Dalton Schultz again, so they're not really looking for a tight end themselves. I'm going to say that the Houston Texans are going to trade up with the New York Giants, giving up their 3rd and 2nd round pick next year. 3rd round pick this year, I should say. 2nd rounder next year. And they're going to trade up. Also, their 1st round pick is involved in this, by the way, just making sure they know. So they swap 1st, they give a 2nd, and they give a 3rd. And they move up to number 6 overall, and they pair C.J. Stroud back with Marvin Harrison Jr. Marvin Harrison did not play very well with Kyle McCord. Then again, who would? But Marvin Harrison with C.J. Stroud looked electric and was the talk. It was a lot like Jamar Chase when Jamar Chase basically sat out just because he didn't want to get hurt so he could go to the draft. Everybody was talking about Marvin Harrison this time 2 years ago as, why can't he go out now? Why can't he go ahead and go to the NFL? This is why. This is why I think you've got to do something like this, because Stroud to Harrison is an electric connection. Monica, what are your thoughts on that?
This one is chef's kiss. I love this.
I would too, personally, because then maybe I could kind of cancel out Dan if I drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. This,
I think, almost immediately skyrockets Houston to the top of the AFC.
And they have the draft capital to do that. They can. They're still, you know, they traded up last year to 2, or to 3 after drafting at 2, and they still have a 1st-round pick this year from the Cleveland Browns. go off, King. At number 7, I'm going to give Joe Alt to the Tennessee Titans. And I'm going to go ahead and go through 8 through 10 as well and let you talk about them now. We're out of the top 6. Seems appropriate to just kind of talk a little bit more rapid fire here. Joe Alt to the Titans at 7. Rome Odunze stays the same to the Falcons at 8. Olu Fashanu, the tackle to the Bears at 9, stays the same. And so does Talise Fuaga, tackle out of Oregon State to the Jets. Monica, do you have any glaring observations or thoughts on these 5 selections here, 6 through 10?
So, Odunze to Atlanta would make that offense just sickening. Awesome. And Talise Fuaga, the more that I watch on him, I've just been watching clips. I mean, obviously they're handpicked to show the best, but the more and more that I've seen, I really, really like him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good tackle personally. I mean, obviously I think that he's a top 10 pick in my mocks, but I do think that that's going to end up being a really good steal for them.
I think he's going to be what Mekhi Becton should have been.
Yeah, and Becton hasn't been terrible, but he's not lived up to the hype.
No.
At number 11, number 12, number 13, 14, and 15, all stays the same. Okay. Cooper DeJean to the Vikings, Byron Murphy to the Broncos, Bo Nix to the Raiders, Dallas Turner to the Saints, and Jared Verse goes a pick later to the Seahawks. Terrion Arnold goes at 15 to the Indianapolis Colts. Monica, what are your thoughts on 11 through 15 here?
I like it. Bo Nix is probably one of the most interesting prospects to me. So I wouldn't like him to go to Oakland, but I think it would be hilarious if the Raiders got Xavier Worthy at 13.
That's true. And we'll talk about him in just a little bit. Spoiler alert. We will also probably in my next mock draft, I'm going to give the Broncos a quarterback. I just haven't decided who yet. You release Russell Wilson. I had made this mock draft prior to that being completely official in my brain. I'd already determined Byron Murphy the second was going to stay there at 12. So I think the next go around, though, we'll be looking at a quarterback for Denver. All right, pick number 16 through 20. We have Jared Verse to the Seahawks, and then Quinyon Mitchell to the Jaguars. And you have Nate Wiggins to the Bengals and J.J. McCarthy to the Rams and then Jackson Powers Johnson to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Monica, your thoughts on 16 through 20.
So I'm pretty good with this. Quinyon Mitchell, even before his combine, he was starting to go up on people's draft boards, so I'm not going to be as grouchy, I guess, about that one as I would be.
Yeah.
But interesting. J.J. McCarthy under Matt Stafford would be dynamic.
He did, by the way, Quinyon Mitchell. He climbed 7 spots in this mock draft from my first one. He was at 24 to the Cowboys in my first mock draft. So he's climbed up by 7 spots. And some of that's just the chatter at the combine. So, and I do think J.J. McCarthy obviously would be a good pickup there in L.A. You're going to have some plan in place with Matthew Stafford. The Lions got lucky that they were able to leverage Matthew Stafford's final 6 years in the NFL and get Jared Goff, who's played very well for them. And had that not happened, Hendon Hooker would be the savior right now, and we would have not seen him play a down basically his entire rookie season. So, Monica, thoughts on Nate Wiggins and Jackson Powers Johnson?
No, I think they're solid. I agree with them. Jackson Powers Johnson seems like the perfect AFC North player.
I sure hope so. We need him desperately. All right, next 4 here. Jerzon Newton, defensive lineman to the Miami Dolphins. Zach Frazier, center to the Philadelphia Eagles. These two picks, before I get to the hot button one, where the Giants have traded down, of course, to 23, these two picks, Newton and Frazier, they address glaring needs right now that these two teams have not had a chance to address. The Dolphins decided to let Christian Wilkins walk. And the Eagles just had an emotional Jason Kelce ride off into the sunset after a 13-year career, and he's done. And you could put Landon Dickerson into that role of center and then try to draft a guard, but Zach Frazier is no one to, you know, turn your nose up to. And I believe if you were able to go from Kelce to Frazier and you have Landon Dickerson in case Frazier's better suited to play guard, you're safe either way. But Landon Dickerson was drafted 3 or 4 seasons ago now, and I think he's a better guard than he would be a center.
I have also heard rumors that Cam Jurgens is going to slide right into the center role.
Okay.
So in that case, I might see them going somewhere else.
Yeah.
But if they do make this pick, that says a lot about how they feel about Cam Jurgens.
Yeah. All right. At pick number 23, the Giants, they traded down. And they take Xavier Worthy. This is the combine specialty. Players that break the 40-yard dash thing are almost always considered to be a round one lock here lately. And I think Xavier Worthy is going to climb up teams' boards. I've seen some even starting to put him with the Chiefs and saying, hey, speed kills. They miss Tyreek Hill. Well, they really don't miss him. They've won two Super Bowls without him. And yes, Mahomes hasn't played as well with MVP caliber numbers this past season, but he won an MVP without him too. And they didn't have any type of speed threat. So, but I gave the Giants Xavier Worthy because this just to me screams New York. They drafted Wandale Robinson. That has not panned out yet. He's been hurt a lot. They drafted before that Kadarius Toney, and that didn't work out either. And he was supposed to be a pretty good wide receiver. They're known for missing on these guys, and I just believe that Xavier Worthy is going to be another miss. But I'm going to put him there anyway because this always happens, right?
Yeah. So I, you know, this podcast is called Going on a Tangent, and I need to go on a tangent about this for just a second.
Do it.
What is so irritating to me about everyone going crazy for these four fast 40-yard dash numbers from the combine is really just, it boils down to this. Okay, so I looked up combine results, NFL.com. I don't think they have everybody, but they had just like a sample.
Yeah.
The fastest corner 40 time on there was 4.28 seconds, and the slowest was 4.64. So then I looked at safeties. The fastest time was 4.41, and the slowest was 4.65. Then I decided to look at the wide receivers. The fastest time was obviously Worthy's 4.21, and the slowest was 4.63. So for all of these position groups, from the top to the bottom, we're talking about less than half of a second for a 40-yard dash.
Mm-hmm.
So does a 4.21 really matter that much more than a 4.31 when you have someone on the other side of the field who could also run a 4.2 or a 4.3? Speed matters at lower levels of football because there's such a greater talent disparity. However, at this, you're getting the most elite of the elite. And recently, I've heard interviews with retired NFL players where they talked about how they learned techniques at the end of their career to help them compete at that elite level, even when they didn't have the speed anymore. So we're talking about really, really small differences. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that the corner at the comp that ran the 4.28 at the combine wouldn't have run a 4.18? If he ran at a different time of the day. These differences are so small at this level, I just don't think it really matters that much.
Yeah, there was a guy in my Madden franchise. His name was Marion Justice, and he was wide receiver. And in the beginning of his career, he was blazing fast, and I was able to just kind of lob it up. He would go catch it. No problem. Every time. Then it got to be year 16 with him. And here he is, you know, he's 36 years old. He's still playing. He broke, because I was determined to break all these records with a 36-year-old receiver. He broke all these records, both receptions, yardage, touchdowns, all of it, by being basically a possession receiver, where he would catch the ball 5 yards down the field, and maybe he could make you miss for another 5 to 20, and seldom he could make you miss and go all the way for a touchdown, but the speed was no longer really there anymore. And yet he was still able to destroy the opponent in front of him. And I think back to Calvin Johnson, who was never really considered to be a blazing speedster. In fact, Monica, pull up his 40 time while I'm talking about this, because I'm curious. And Larry Fitzgerald too, mind you. Some of the best receivers we've ever seen in the NFL that have played longer in the NFL. And Calvin could have continued to play if it weren't for the Detroit Lions doing yet another Barry Sanders impression and hurting another player's career and making him want to leave. But Calvin Johnson, I don't think he ran in the 4 range, did he?
Calvin Johnson was 4.35.
Okay,
Larry
wow.
Fitzgerald was 4.63.
Okay, but there it is. By what you're talking about, if we were to say right now to everybody in the NFL and everybody listening to this, all eight of you, if we were to say you have the choice, Calvin Johnson, John Ross, Larry Fitzgerald, Chris Johnson, and Xavier Worthy, who's going one and two?
Obviously the two slowest players there.
And you might say, now wait a minute, that's hindsight. We already know what their career is. But what we're trying to tell you and what Monica's saying is the 40-yard dash doesn't make whether a player is going to be great or not. Because by all account, Calvin Johnson, I was wrong on him, but right on Larry Fitzgerald. Calvin ran in the 4.35. Sure, that was blazing fast for a 6.5 receiver. But Larry Fitzgerald ran a 4.63.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, Larry played for how many years? He played from 03 to like 2017.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought it was like 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
One thing that works against Worthy as far as being able to, I guess, overcome his speed problem is he's really small.
Yeah.
He's a small dude. And I think that's going to be a problem when he has to deal with the size of NFL players.
Yeah, unless he can be shifty like Tyreek Hill, he's a problem. Okay. Number 24 and 25. Leetu Latu, edge player to the Cowboys from UCLA, and Amarius Mims, tackle for the Green Bay Packers. Monica, I tried to give the Cowboys a running mate for Michael Parsons because Parsons has not had the statistics late in the season, and partly because there's nobody on the other side that they're really afraid of and that they're really worried about. So they can double and triple him, and though for some reason the NFL believes that that makes you a defensive player of the year, sorry, Myles Garrett, 19 sacks is better than a 27-point-whatever pass rush win rate. I'm getting angry. Sorry. You got to have somebody on the other side. Alex Highsmith compliments T.J. Watt, and T.J. Watt compliments more than Alex Highsmith. You need that for Micah Parsons. And then Amarius Mims, David Bakhtiari is no longer a Green Bay Packer. Now, I'll throw a devil's advocate and a little caveat in here. I am tempted in my next draft to sprinkle the running backs in, and I might do it, but I haven't done it yet, but I might. But I would look at Green Bay as a possibility for a running back because if they're letting A.J. Dillon go and they're going to probably be trying to re-sign Aaron Jones to a long-term contract, you can bank on them hedging their bets and drafting a running back in the first three rounds just to be safe. But what do you think about Leetu Latu and Amarius Mims?
Okay, so Latu, I don't know if you remember, in 2020, he had to medically retire from football for a neck injury.
Yep.
And Dallas already has enough injury concerns on their defense. So are they going to want to take him, even though obviously he's been medically cleared, is that right. Worth it?
Right.
And also, I personally might switch those picks. And I've lost two to the Packers and Mims to the Cowboys, especially since this week it's kind of obvious that Tyron Smith is not coming back to the Cowboys.
That's true, too. And that's another thing that, you know, when you make these mock drafts and you got to lock them in, right? You're like, I can't change them at the last minute because I got to be a man of my word. But
yeah,
you do that and you just kind of live by the sword here. But I do agree that Amarius Mims would be a great pick in Dallas. I also think that you could maybe see a quarterback go there too if they don't want to really pay Dak all that money. Number 26 through 30, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback out of Alabama. This guy is like free-falling, it looks like. And I don't know what the deal is with that, but I don't hear his name at all right now. I'm sure some of that has to do with the combine and what he didn't do or what he did, you know, do to make some teams upset. But I don't think this is really where he's going to go, but this is just where I keep finding myself trying to put him. I put him at 17 in my first mock draft. He fell almost 10 spots. And that seems to be just because of the combine. 27, J.C. Latham. And then 28, 29, and 30, no change from the last time we did this. Troy Franklin from Oregon to the Bills. Ladd McConkey, who I genuinely believe is going to thrive in the NFL. His gauntlet drill was spectacular. And then Jermaine Burton, wide receiver out of Alabama, to the Baltimore Ravens. Monica, what you got on those? We don't really have much to say on 27 through 30. We've done those before, but talk about Kool-Aid McKinstry maybe and tell me what your thoughts are on him.
I don't understand how he is falling like he is.
Yeah. Everybody's enamored with Terrion Arnold.
And I agree that they should be, but Kool-Aid was hyped as one of those. He's one of the rare players who was so hyped at the beginning of the season of, I can't believe we get to see Kool-Aid, you know, and he's going to go at the top of the draft. And we finished up the season and he did exactly what you wanted him to be. And he was exactly what you wanted him to be. And now he's free falling.
Right.
I don't understand. And I think people are paying too much attention to Nate Wiggins, who is very good. But I've watched Clemson. I've watched a lot of Clemson, and when I'm on this podcast, I pack my bias and put it away. So this is not me trying to have a biased take, but I think Kool-Aid is more physical than Wiggins.
Yeah, I agree. I'm enamored by the fall, and I don't think it's going to literally stay this way because there's several teams that I could see taking him. I could see the Jets saying, hey, let's take him and pair him with Sauce Gardner because you gotta do something like that to make it possible for Aaron Rodgers to really have a chance at coming back.
That 31-32.
Insanity. I do think that would be insane. I hope that happens now. 31 and 32, no real change. 32 stays the same. Jatavion Sanders, tight end out of Texas. I get the impression that Kelsey is probably retiring after the next 2 years. That's my guess. And if he has another season where he does not come close to 1,000 yards, I could see it being more likely. But I still don't know why people aren't doing the two tight end set. I'm going to say that till some team brings it back. A team like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, if you give Mahomes two tight ends, I mean, literally what Brady had with Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski before Aaron Hernandez did what he did, it was unstoppable. I mean, it was the talk of the town that had Gronk been healthy during that Super Bowl against the Giants, there was no answer for either one of them in New York. And I believe wholeheartedly had Gronk been healthy, they would have won that game. You got to give Mahomes something like that, another edge. And you can find another receiver later in the draft or even through free agency. You don't have to draft a guy round one just because you need a receiver. But I'm giving Troy Fatanu or Fautanu. I don't know how to say his name. So I'm giving Troy the tackle from Washington to the 49ers. Monica, give me your quick thoughts on this as we bring this episode to a close. These last two picks, the guys that were in the Super Bowl, one team was so close. And they need to keep that offensive line intact. The other team, they still managed to win, and they just need to continue to add to that firepower. Give me your thoughts on 31 and 32 as we close out.
That's a really, really good pick for the Niners and for Sanders going to the Chiefs. His issues at Texas were he was not a very good blocker.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be a great blocker as a tight end on the Chiefs.
That's right.
You would be just fine. So I think a lot of teams, they would need more from their tight end to block, but the Chiefs have the luxury of not needing that so much. He would be a very good pickup for them because he is a deep receiving threat for sure.
That's right. Well, Monica, next Monday, we go back to the rumor mill. And I'm looking forward to it. A lot happens over the weekend, so y'all be ready. That's why we picked Monday to be the rumor mill. And obviously, if anything major happens and develops, we'll cover it. But until then, you got anything else to add?
Got nothing.
All right. Take care.